The Guardian.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Today, Carabao Cup action. What did Slaven Bilic say or do at half-time as West Ham shocked Spurs? Pep gets very angry with the ball, saying it's highly unacceptable. He clearly hasn't played with a shoot size 5 recently. Leicester announced Claude Puel, cue tumbleweed and indifference. But is it a sensible appointment? We'll find out. David Unsworth gets a crack at Everton after Koeman got the bullet. Elsewhere, England beat Brazil in the World Cup semi-final under-17s. We'll have Fit Bar Corner, round up a full programme in Serie A, plus your questions, Feedback Corner, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Let's welcome today's panel. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
To see you, nice.
We're doing the Carabao Cup today. Do you want to furnish us with your Carabao box?
Carabao!
You've drunk all the energy drinks since the last round.
Someone else has drunk all the energy drinks.
So someone is running around the Guardian.
Yeah.
Who is it? Owen Jones. He's absolutely... He's lost it, flying around, hurtling around.
I don't think Owen Jones needs energy drinks to run around annoying everyone.
Simon Burton, nice to see you.
Hello.
How
it's
are
lovely
you?
To be here.
Oh, that's great, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Great. Hey, Lars Sivertsen.
Hey, Max. Well, I'm not telling you what I had last time.
But what did you have this time for breakfast?
Oh, yes. I'm a late call-up to this pod, so when I got the message yesterday, we were already heading to a restaurant. Okay. So my plan was initially, next time I'm on this thing, I'm not going to have breakfast. I'm just going to nip this in the bud. Mm-hmm. But as it happens, there were leftovers from the restaurant visit. So when I got up this morning, there was leftover Afghan food in the fridge. So there was a bit of mantu there, which is basically lamb mince wrapped in steamed pastry, served with a bit of yogurt and lentils. Mm. So I ate that, and I've actually just had a message from my girlfriend telling me off for eating that because she was going to eat it.
But you're on the phone. It was a bit like in Catch the Pigeon where the general's arm comes through the phone and grapples
yeah.
the neck. But it's lovely to know that you both like leftovers.
I am in trouble now, so I'm going to swing by the restaurant on my way back from the pod and buy some more. So they'll be there when she gets home.
Buy some more leftovers. Great news. Thanks, Lars. All right, like, at half time, I wrote this. The next manager to get fired after we finish recording the pod will be Slaven Bilic. Spurs were 2-0 up. West Ham were, I mean, they were rubbish. None of them moved around at all. And I can't think of a bigger change in a game, sort of ever, Simon. I don't know what you think. I mean, there was that Arsenal-Newcastle 4-4, but even mm-hmm. for some reason, it seemed so unlikely that West Ham would win this football match.
So I watched it live and I watched the highlights again, and particularly the highlights on Channel 5 in the UK. The commentator, like, the first half was entirely about how Bilic was about to get the sack, how miserable he was looking when they cut to him on the touchline, how dreadful his team was and how they were refusing to play for him. And then, total transformation. By the end, it was a vindication of Bilic and everything he stands for. I mean, it was remarkable. The three goals in, 15 minutes, a shade under 15 minutes, turned the tie on its head. And I just felt, I mean, by the end, I'd had enough talk about Bilic's future. And we focus probably a bit too much on managers, and this coming after Koeman and after Leicester, and I've just kind of had enough of managers getting the boot, and will they or won't they? I mean, sack them if you want to, but don't expect me to be interested in the period before you may or may not sack them. Anyway, so I was pleased with the performance, pleased with the comeback, pleased with the result, because perhaps we can stop talking about Bilic, will he, won't he, and just watch some football.
Lars, Bilic, will he, won't he?
I'm with Simon on this. I don't think we should completely focus on the manager. But the Carabao Cup fascinates me because it is kind of like, it's like the room of requirement in Harry Potter. It can be whatever you need it to be. Like if you go out of the Carabao Cup, you can say, well, you know, we've got bigger fish to fry. If you win in the Carabao Cup, you go, well, this will galvanize our season. So it's a really great tournament for teams.
Listen, I got so much stick for criticizing Lord of the Rings. I'm keeping my powder dry on this.
The Lord of the Rings analogy on Monday, followed by a Harry Potter analogy yeah. today. The listeners are going to be leaving in droves.
Producer Jonathan says Istanbul. But for some reason, and maybe it was only because the Spurs-West Ham game was yesterday, West Ham did celebrate, Simon, like
they'd won the Champions League.
There was a great... So clearly, all the players went to throw their shirts into the away fans at the end of the game. And there was some wonderful footage when Mark Noble went to do it. Don't know if you spotted it.
Yeah.
And so you can see, the camera has followed him. He's done a little post-match interview. And a handheld camera has followed him across the pitch to the away fans. And you can see that he spots someone in the crowd that he thinks deserves his shirt. There is an old woman in a relatively elderly woman, I don't want to traduce her, in a bright red coat. And you see him focus on her, you walk with him up towards her, you see him launch his shirt towards her, and then you see two overweight West Ham fans launch themselves in front of her, saying, "You ain't getting that shirt, Grandma."
And there's a moat in front as well, as we remember. Oh, it's marvellous.
Yeah.
And one of the men fell into the moat, didn't he?
Both, I imagine, sustained a few bruises and scrapes, and only one of them ended up with a shirt.
Well, actually, the one who ended up with a shirt gave the shirt to, like, a little kid. And at the end of the game, there was the two overweight West Ham fans sort of shaking hands and saying, "Hey, neither of us got the shirt, but it doesn't matter because West Ham won."
Well, that's a beautiful thing.
One guy grabbed it as the other just dived across the screen. It was like he was taking a bullet for the president. And then suddenly disappears into this moat.
That was a good moment. You didn't see the match, but you saw that.
Yeah.
I'm watching again. No. Simon is absolutely right. There was a woman in a red coat. Noble does not get enough purchase as he throws the shirt.
No, you see, I think the shirt being a garment wasn't heavy enough.
Well, I mean, however you just... I mean, you know, the physics of Noble didn't show... I guess either the shirt was not heavy enough. The shirt does not weigh heavy enough on Mark Noble.
Pep Guardiola would have issues with that shirt.
He would too, wouldn't he?
Are you saying that Mark Noble is just not used to celebrating things? And it's just, this is completely
Well, I think the previous night, one of the Crystal Palace players threw a shirt into the crowd and had it thrown back at him.
He did, yeah, Papa Suarez. And actually, funny, but then when you think what Suarez's been through, a little bit harsh. I mean... On the Noble subject, people have been saying this season that his legs have gone, possibly his arms have also gone. One quick word on Spurs. Do we think this has done Pochettino a favour by he doesn't now have to play the three games if they were to get to the final? Because I kind of think everything that we have heard about Pochettino and everything, he's not the kind of manager that will be, that doesn't matter. He'll be absolutely livid with what happened in that second half.
You think he will be?
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be that fussed. He's already said he's not particularly interested in that competition, and you could argue that last night's result was a decent one for both teams. Spurs have one less thing to worry about. He wants to focus on winning the league and the Champions League. They came up short in the league in each of the last two occasions. I don't think he'll worry too much.
Is the Wembley hoodoo back, Lars?
It's the Carabao Cup. It is whatever you want it to be. You know, whatever narrative you want to go for, you know. You can... See, that sounds a lot like the atmosphere at Wembley during Tottenham's Carabao Cup matches.
Everton got rid of Ronald Koeman on Monday, just after we finished recording. David Unsworth has been put in charge for now. They lost 2-1 at Chelsea, but by all accounts, a promising performance. And I think I kind of like... the way David Unsworth talks, he sounds quite impressive, doesn't he? Having not really known where he'd been sort of since he last sort of stroked a penalty away with a side foot pass for Everton. Do we think he's going to get it?
The last moment that I noticed David Unsworth was when Nias was like way out in the cold. Koeman was ignoring him and belittling him. And Nias was playing with Unsworth's under-23s and was playing really well. And Unsworth told the media, you know, this guy is a solid professional. He's doing great work. I think he's like was supporting him publicly. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's given, you know, it says something. I felt it said something at the time about Koeman, about perhaps the relationship between coaches at the club, but also about Unsworth's integrity, I suppose, and the way he deals with players, perhaps being a bit different to the way Koeman does. I mean, I don't know, but I thought at the time it reflected well on him. And you know, now I don't expect him to get a long time at the helm there. But I wish him the best of luck.
I also think, from Everton's perspective, that as much as they probably needed to let go of Koeman, much of the problem there is to do with the squad being put together in this completely weird way, and they're going to have to change the composition of the squad, bringing in a forward of some type, some more better wingers possibly, and that's not something you can do now. So if you have this sort of big name manager you want to really go all in for a new point, he's probably going to have a tricky first season anyway, because this is a squad that doesn't make any sense. So they might as well do something similar to what Spurs did with Tim Sherwood, is that they have someone internally who they quite like and they'd like to give someone a go. So you have David Unsworth there now, he might as well take them for the rest of the season, because there's enough quality there that you can imagine them getting relegated. And if he does well, you'd consider him for a full-time thing, and if not, you can give yourself time to line up whoever you want in the long term in the background of that.
But at least he did, you say that they're, you know, their squad is unbalanced. I know it's a Carabao Cup game, so lots of people make changes anyway, but he did play Lennon, didn't he? Yes, he played a winger. Did he play Morales as well? He put one of the kids in. I think Schneidlin was ill, so he brought one of the under-23s in who had a decent game. So he did things that Koeman, for some reason, didn't know what to do.
It was their best performance of the season, I think, without question, even though they lost. Everton fans seem to have been absolutely delighted with it. Whether or not they'll risk giving him a go remains to be seen, but he's a Everton through and through, isn't he?
I have written in my notes, players playing in their actual position, exciting times. So I mean, I think that the winger thing is true, and also having Tom Davies back in the team, I always thought it was very harsh on him being completely left out this season. I don't see, obviously Koeman saw him more than I did, but every time I see him he looks good and energetic, and you know, the kind of player Everton fans I'm sure would want to see on the pitch.
I don't detect any sympathy for Koeman coming from anywhere around this table. Does anyone?
So I think that they have had hard fixtures at the start of the season, and that might be, so maybe it's a little harsh to judge them so quickly, but at the same time, the games I've seen them play this season, they have played miserably. It's not just about results. They have been totally disjointed, and you know, you just can't keep a team going like that. You know, like I say, I'm not big on rushing to change managers, but there was something rotten there.
He seems to be a very arrogant man who, you know, as recently as May, he was sort of coyly laughing off suggestions that he might be the next manager of Barcelona, you know, as if while simultaneously trying to convey the impression that he would be the next manager of Barcelona. And I think Everton fans aren't sorry to see him go, because he seemed to treat his time there as a stepping stone. One thing, maybe it's something and nothing, but he always referred to the club as Everton, never as we or us, which I think didn't enamour him to Toffees.
Strange.
Fans.
Why would he do that? Did he do that at Southampton? Do we know if he has ever said we as a club? It's a strange thing to
remember.
Do. Lars?
This is one of those things that's a little bit tricky, because I don't know, but whoever in the Everton system made the decision to spend a whole bunch of money on three players who basically play in the same position on the pitch, you know, whenever that conversation was had, and whoever thought that was a good idea is someone whose job security should perhaps be questioned.
Just on Chelsea, lovely goal from Willian, and Danny Drinkwater, was that his first game of the season, I think, since signing? I think it was. Apparently played very, very well. There was a three-day window when Michael Appleton and David Unsworth could have been in the manager Royal Rumble. And AD said, who would win in a fight between Michael Appleton and David Unsworth?
I think Appleton would win now, but both in their pomp, I'd say it would be close enough.
I think that's a fairly decent summary. Probably Appleton's the one I'd fear the most.
Yeah, probably.
Is David Unsworth the current Premier League manager who looks the most like a minor character in Downton Abbey? If you put him in the suit, like instead of the tracksuit, that would work.
Would he be downstairs?
I think he's a butler. Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any upstairs? Arsene Wenger could be a doctor in it, couldn't he?
Yeah,
I think. Pulis is a farmhand of some sort, isn't he? Right. Well, Michael Appleton did, you know, lead Leicester to two wins. They beat Leeds 3-1. But since then, Claude Puel has come in. An instant reaction from Leicester fans has been sort of meh. Richard Key's response was RIP British coaching.
It's dead.
Where does he
Killed
work?
It.
Where does he
Stone
work?
Stone dead.
He's in Doha. RIP Doha pundits.
But on a serious note, like, I know Southampton under Claude Puel was not a non-stop party for everyone who watched it. I get that. But he's a manager who's won Ligue 1 with Monaco. He's taken Lille to the Champions League. He's taken Lyon to the semi-finals of the Champions League. Had a slightly meh league season with Southampton, but did take them to the final of what is now the Carabao Cup, which, as we know, is hugely important if that's what you decide. So, in terms of British manager, I mean, maybe it needs pointing out, there aren't that many British managers around with a CV that looks anything like that. Mm. So I think maybe give him a bit of a chance, even though the Southampton thing is a bit
boring.
He seems
to be one of those rare managers who, at clubs, he's either seen as a success or a failure, but even at the clubs where he's failed, he's actually succeeded. If you get what I mean.
That's really bad. I mean, that's a terrible PR job, isn't it, that he's done, you know, to be really good, but everyone thinks you're useless.
To finish eighth place at Southampton, get to the major cup final, play really well in that cup final, they should have won that final, and then get the boot at the end of the season, take some doing.
I think you could make an argument, a very solid argument, in favour of his appointment at Leicester and against it, because he is, you know, the classic safe pair of hands, and he never really stood a chance at Southampton because most of the fans, or a large section of them, didn't want him there in the first place. The style of football they played was awful to watch. In their final 7 home games last season, they only scored in one of them, and in their final 8 games of the season, home and away, they only won 1. So it's a measure of A, how many poor teams there are in the Premier League, that they still managed to finish 8th with that record. But yeah, he still, that's as high as Southampton could probably expect to finish.
And as high as Leicester can expect to finish, ignoring the obvious?
Well, 7th might be up for grabs now. So, true. Because Everton have got off to such a bad start. But yeah, I would, if I was a Leicester fan and a season ticket holder who was going along to watch them play every season, or every week in, week out, I'd be slightly concerned about the lack of entertainment that could be very much ahoy. But, you know, I presume the owners of Leicester just don't want to get relegated.
But I can't remember who I heard saying Claypool likes to steady a ship and then start playing quite good football, and he steadied the ship at Southampton and got to a cup final, and then he was, what we would have seen this year is Southampton spreading their wings, but we didn't get that chance, and certainly Southampton fans are not getting their chance now.
I think his almost total lack of charisma in press conferences and stuff as well didn't endear him to the press. So, you know, he didn't get much of a sympathetic hearing for getting sacked despite doing quite well.
So he needs to be, what, funnier or angrier? Because they're the two things that we kind of like from a manager, aren't they?
I was about to put that to you guys. Like, would he get a better ride in the UK press if he said some really like paranoid and loopy things in the press conferences, because that seems to go down well.
Well, he would for me, definitely. Manchester City beat Wolves on penalties. The main headline, Pep blaming the football. The ball is not acceptable to play with at that level. We play with a different ball. It's not Nike, Adidas, I don't know. It's a different brand. It's unacceptable to play with the ball. If it's for the marketing, for the money, for many reasons, it's okay, but not acceptable to play with the ball. No weight, nothing. Lars, you're laughing at Pep.
I mean, he's probably right. But the thing is, if you're the manager of one of the wealthiest clubs in football history, just blaming the ball is just bad PR. You look really stupid. Even if you have a point, it sounds completely ridiculous.
But particularly given that the ball weighs exactly the same to the gram as the Premier League ball. So there may be some issues with it. It may fly through the air slightly differently, but it's not too light.
And it weighs the same for Wolves, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
But they also failed to score with it.
It's a good point.
I didn't watch the game, though. Maybe they were actually playing with like a tin of Carabao or something, and we just don't know because no one saw the game.
I did a whole radio show on this yesterday, and people getting nostalgic about what they used to play with when they were little. Lumps Tango. Of coal. And oh yeah, you know, bricks. Just lots of sellotape wound up together. I would make, you know, if a balloon. If you got a balloon, right, for the Carabao Cup, would you watch it more? Would you care about it more?
Well, if it was one of those balls from
the garage.
Yeah, the service station forecourt in it, that would be quite interesting. I mean, you know, Pep, shut up, stop being an idiot. But he made that point upon being given the opportunity to praise a fine Wolves performance, and didn't comment on Wolves' performance in any way, and I think that's angered a lot of Wolves fans. Certainly angered Football Weekly's Jackie Oatley, who was in the highest of high dudgeon on Twitter yesterday, giving out about Pep's lack of appreciation of Wolverhampton Wanderers' fine exhibition of football.
And their reserve goalkeeper is Will Norris, signed from Cambridge. Good young prospect. Look out for him.
Also, the idea of a representative of Manchester City criticising an organisation for taking money. just, I mean... it boggles my little brain.
I think this idea of using a tin of Carabao is this should get...
Hey, given when it bursts open, is that game finished?
Maybe. Or maybe that's like a yellow card to whoever kicked it.
That's a good point.
I mean, from a health and safety perspective, this is a terrible idea, but it would be fun to watch.
The commentator thought that Sergio Aguero had broken the club goal-scoring record in the penalty shootout. It was a lovely... Panenka, wasn't it? But it doesn't count. And there was a squirrel on the pitch, which is nice. Arsenal 2, Norwich 1. After extra time, Arsenal's new hero, Eddie Nketiah. Arsene Wenger said, "I'm impressed to think he was not even conceived when I was hit. When I was already here."
Is that a confession of some sort?
Will there be a Jeremy Kyle DNA test with Arsene sitting on one side going... dishevelled in a pair of tracksuit trousers going, "I'm not the father." But he looked good, didn't he? That's nice for Arsenal. Nice young prospect of blood in the Carabao Cup and see where they go.
It used to be the story of the Carabao Cup every year was like there was interest in seeing who Arsenal fielded. They generally had some youngsters you'd never heard of who often would go on to become, you know, first team players at Arsenal or elsewhere of some regard, some repute. And that hasn't really happened for quite a while. So it would be nice.
Matt Macey in goal became the 85th player Wenger has given a debut to in the League Cup. Sort of proving your point. The AGM is happening as we speak, which presumably I saw Stan Kroenke was trending earlier. I believe it's because he said Arsene Wenger's doing a good job or something, and Arsenal fans are unhappy about that.
I can feel the eyes of producer Mel boring into my soul. From behind the glass.
You never talk about Norwich, is that?
Yes.
Oh, come on, do you want to talk about Norwich?
Well, I know she was at the game, mm-hmm. and feels very aggrieved that Norwich didn't win on the basis it was a fine performance. They took the lead. They should have gone 3 or 4-1 up. They were denied a penalty towards the end. Josh Murphy scored a fine goal, got in behind the Arsenal defence and swept it past the keeper. But ultimately, they came up short, those big-eared farm boys.
Breaking news, Sir Chips Keswick has been reappointed to the Arsenal board after an official pole vault. Pole vault? Hey, that's, you know, they want to make the AGMs interesting.
Yes,
here.
AGM effort.
Stan Kroenke cleared 4 metres, 57. Sir Chips Keswick has been reappointed after an official pole vote. At the AGM. Anyway, I mean, is he? I don't. He's just got a wonderful name, hasn't he? Sir Chips.
You can't quibble with Sir Chips.
You cannot quibble with Sir Chips. That'll do for part one. Before we go to the break, we have a live show coming up, everybody. Thursday, the 14th of December at the Emmanuel Centre in central London. The lineup so far, me, Baz, Barney Rone, more to be announced imminently, and cameos aplenty. So there's a link below. Please can we make sure there are more people in the audience than on the panel? That'll make me happy. Are you going to come, Baz?
Well, I bet.
You better. Chaps, do you fancy it?
Yeah.
Lars?
I mean...
I think
we need to keep the number of cameos down if your goal of audience to panel is going to if that ratio is going to stay positive.
It's a very good point. Anyway, come and watch us. It'll be good. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. I presume you've just bought your ticket for the live show. Thanks for doing that. A few more Carabao Cup games. Swansea 0, Manchester United 2. Couple for Lingard. Luke Shaw's only played 3 minutes. Or he only played 3 minutes in that game. What? You know, Jose just wants to ship him off in January, do we presume, Baz?
I'm not sure. Jose just appears to want to humiliate him and undermine him at every available opportunity. I think his treatment of Shaw has been absolutely appalling. Apparently, they're no longer on speaking terms, and I think Shaw should move somewhere else because Mourinho clearly not only doesn't rate him, but wants to make a fool of him as often as he can. I think giving him 3 minutes at the end of that game, just as an unnecessary time-wasting substitution when they were already 2-0 up and Swansea were dead and buried, was just another, struck me as just another attempt to embarrass him. And I'm not sure Shaw deserves that, really. It can't be healthy. He was signed for United as the world's most expensive teenager. He had that horrible leg break. He's come back from that, but not really come back from it, because Mourinho will not play him. He's fourth or fifth choice left back at United now. And he needs to go somewhere else. Or he needs to uncuff himself from his current manager. Swansea made 8 changes, Paul Clement, from the team that lost against Leicester. And one of the changes they didn't make was Martin Olsen, their left back, who limped off against United with a hamstring injury. He's now going to be out for, 3 weeks minimum with a hammy. And he's the only left back Swansea have at the club, which seems absolutely...
Literally the only one.
Yeah. Which seems remarkable for a Premier League football club. Just poor organisation, the fact that they don't have anyone else, and why pick him for a game of such little consequence?
Well, because they didn't have any other left-backs.
Well, they could have played someone else at left-back. Kyle Naughton came on for him and filled in. You know, they're struggling in the league. That's what they need to concentrate on. So it seemed a bit of a gamble to play Olsen. And now they're going to be without him for several weeks.
Bristol City 4, Crystal Palace 1. Palace's 5th defeat in 7 since Roy took over. We mentioned Papi Suari throwing his shirt in the crowd and the crowd just throwing it back. There was a nice tweet from Horror B. Magnusson, plays for Bristol City in the Icelandic. And what a night. Incredible performance from all the lads. Bristol City fans, amazing. Hopefully Hodgson enjoyed the Viking clap. There you go, Roy. It's never going to leave you, is it? Bournemouth beat Middlesbrough 3-1. Gary Monk made 10 changes. 323-mile trip for Middlesbrough fans. They've not won since the 19th of September. Well, anyway, they didn't
Callum
win.
Wilson.
Say again?
Callum Wilson played for the first time since his cruciate ligament injury back at the early days of February.
Oh, yeah.
And scored from the penalty spot. So that is a welcome sign, and Bournemouth could do with him returning to his best.
Does anybody know who's doing the draw for the fourth round of the Carabao Cup, which is at 4 p.m. tonight? So it will have happened by this time.
I don't know, but I'm guessing it must be two greats of the English game and two football players of the highest renown.
Phil Tufnell? And Matt Dawson?
No, I think you've made a mistake there.
No, I haven't.
That's definitely not. No, that's the wrong names.
Phil Tufnell tweets, looking forward to presenting the draw. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all, does it? I mean, I once interviewed Phil Tufnell for National Sausage Week, so, you know, I don't know why he was the official spokesman for sausages, and I'm not sure why he's doing the draw for the Carabao Cup, but he's a nice fella.
My theory is that some of the draws have prompted a lot of laughter because they've gone horribly wrong, and by getting in these two bastions of a question of sport, they will ensure that nobody laughs at all.
But do we know why they're not doing them in the middle of the night anymore? Like, was that an attempt at breaking into the Chinese market unsuccessful?
Maybe Phil just doesn't want to do it. Phil said, I'll do it, but not at 3 a.m. Who knows? Perhaps more importantly, England under-17s booked their place in the World Cup final yesterday with a 3-1 win over Brazil in Kolkata. They play Spain in the final. Peter Crouch sent this tweet. Youngsters these days have no regard for tradition. We don't get to finals of World Cups. How dare they? You made an interesting point, Simon, about Ryan Brewster scored a hat-trick in this game, also scored a hat-trick against the USA. 10 shots, 7 goals so far in the tournament. About him, where he's come from.
Just that he and Edward Nketiah, who scored the 2 goals for Arsenal in the Carabao Cup, are both refugees from the Chelsea youth system. And I mean, we're aware of how many players they have in that scheme, but increasingly it seems a trend that people have to leave it in order to excel.
Manchester City's Phil Foden is, by all accounts, the star man for England. There are 4 Chelsea players who are still at Chelsea, started that game. Is it worth asking those boring questions? How do we transfer this to the full England team? How excited should we be for the future? How many of these guys will actually represent England? Or is it actually impossible to answer any of those questions?
The last time you asked me my opinion on an England underage success, somebody wrote to the Daily Star or texted the Daily Star and said I should be fired when I give my answer. So I move it along to someone else.
England have never succeeded particularly at youth level. And in the last, I don't know, year or so, we have started to do so. And that cannot possibly be a bad thing. You know, it may not turn out to be the first step of England's return to global domination, but it is still positive, so hurrah.
It is a challenge you're always going to have when you have your domestic top division is the wealthiest league in the world, because all these clubs, if they need a backup left back like Swansea does, like they have enough money to go out and sign someone who's played 50 games for a country somewhere and you established internationals. You know, most Premier League teams can afford to have two full internationals from whatever country in every position. So what you need managers who are brave enough to use these young players. And crucially, you need boards and clubs who are savvy enough to think, okay, we're not going to sack him immediately if we use some of these young players.
Young English managers like Maurizio Pochettino.
Yes, that is the future.
Boring but important. The big six have failed in their Premier League TV rights deal. City, United, Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool and Chelsea appeal to get more of the income from TV. A plan suggested 35% of revenue from the sale of global TV rights should be divided based on league position. A meeting set for Wednesday was called off as no decision was close at all, which I think we all agree is a good thing. We don't need the rich clubs getting any richer than they already are. Italy, there was a full roundup, there was a full set of games in Italy this week. Readings from Anne Frank's diary and a minute's silence occurred before every game. This came 3 days after Lazio fans had littered the Stadio Olimpico in Rome with images of Anne Frank wearing a jersey of a Roma. It's a totally bizarre story, but at least the Italian League have done something to kind of fix it. On the pitch, Barry, are you across it all?
Milan beat Chievo 4-1 in Verona. Leonardo Bonucci suspended after getting sent off last weekend. More importantly, he'll be suspended for Milan's game against Juve at the weekend on Saturday evening. Milan have only won one of their last 12 matches against Juve, and some are saying that Bonucci is playing so badly that they're possibly better off without him. So that's quite kind of interesting. Juve beat Spal 4-1, which, you know, they were expected to beat this poor side. But Gonzalo Higuain and Paulo Dybala scored in the same game for the first time since last February.
And did you see Dries Mertens' goal? Napoli's second. It's just an amazing touch. This long ball comes over the top, and he doesn't just control it. He just sort of feathers the ball down into his path.
And it's sort of in his stride as well. Yeah. Like, it doesn't look like he's moving. And the finish is not bad either.
Yeah,
so
it's a great finish.
Amazing player.
It's a bit like that viral touch of, similar but not the same as that, you know, that one of Berbatov, who just managed to control a football like it's a balloon. You know,
but Mertens, of course, whacks it into the top corner with his other foot as well, which is also pretty impressive. Yeah. It's worth looking up.
I say it was a 3-2 win for Napoli over Genoa. Barry.
Lazio won their seventh straight game, the 2-1 win over Bologna. And spare a thought for Rick Karsdorp, who signed for Rome from Feyenoord during the summer. But he had to have surgery on his meniscus after signing, and finally made his debut in Roma's win over Crotone and did the cruciate in his other knee, and will now be out for, well, it's a potential season ender. So yeah, that must be just heartbreaking for the kid.
Yeah, and on the Lazio Bologna thing, reports from website Football Italia, headline reading, fascist songs after Anne Frank tribute. So I guess that went about as well as can be expected. Which we should specify is not all Lazio fans. There's a very small minority who insist on embarrassing the club in front of a global media.
In goalkeeper news, Daniel Pedelli's birthday. Tradition at Inter says he has to have flour poured over him and eggs cracked on his head. So that's nice, isn't it? And Gigi Buffon says he'll retire at the end of the season unless Juve win the Champions League. because then he wants to go and win the Club World Cup.
When Juventus were sent down to Serie B, he was asked if he would leave, and he said no, and he was asked why not, because it was a bit of an exodus. And he said, because I've never won Serie B. So if he wanted to win Serie B that badly, he probably wants to win the Club World Cup too.
Doesn't need to retire. He can just keep going down the pyramid. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people that would have him at 60. Just now, you were both reading this, Simon and Lars, of FIFA best FIFA event that happened this week. Ronaldo won the Best FIFA Men's Player Award on Monday, and you've got a sort of a list of who everybody in the world voted for.
There aren't really many completely wacky left field picks, but what I have been, I've been kind of passing through it, looking for people who didn't think that either Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi are up to much. Mm. And the people who don't vote for either tend to be from, I guess, what we could call outposts of the footballing world. So the captains of, for example, I'm going to leave one country out of this list that didn't, but the captains of Andorra, Barbados, Belize, Chinese Taipei, Montserrat, Papua New Guinea, Tanzania and Trinidad and Tobago, the only captains who didn't pick either. But the only country whose captains and coaches didn't, neither of them think that Messi's any good or Ronaldo's any good, are Belize and Germany.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Who did they go for? Who did Germany go for?
Manuel Neuer. Obviously go for the relatively local, locally based players, if not actually German players. So Manuel Neuer goes Toni Kroos, Robert Lewandowski, Arturo Vidal. So all Germany linked.
Did Belize only vote for Belize players?
Belize captain goes, no, if only. Sergio Ramos, Neymar and Alexis Sanchez. And then in the coaches, Jurgen Löw goes Toni Kroos, Manuel Neuer and Neymar.
The coach of Belize has gone a bit sort of YOLO here, and he figures Robert Lewandowski was the best player in the world last year, Gigi Buffon was the second best, and Andres Iniesta was the third best. So no love for any of the big two there.
Lieke Martins of Barcelona in the Netherlands won the women's equivalent after inspiring her country to Euro 2017. Her national coach, Serena Wiegmann, picking up the Best Women's Coach Award. Olivier Giroud won the Puskas Award for Best Goal for his scorpion kick. Which is interesting because I think Emre Can won goal of the season here for his overhead kick, didn't he, against Watford? But that wasn't even in the running, apparently. Zidane won best coach. Ranieri won that last year and he was sacked 6 weeks later. It's unlikely that this will happen again. Dani Alves voted for Tite, the coach of the Brazilian national team. Tite voted for Cristiano Ronaldo instead of Neymar. And Francis Kone won the Fair Play Award for fishing an unconscious goalkeeper's tongue out of his mouth. In the interview after the match, he revealed it was the fourth time he'd saved a fellow player's life. Celtic fans won the Fans Award less than 24 hours after they were sanctioned by UEFA over the fan who approached Kylian Mbappe in their Champions League game against PSG.
Yeah, I think those brilliant Celtic fans have been fined on four separate occasions since the start of last season.
Okay. So prolific. Then.
I mean, as much as these awards are all fascinating and wonderful, it's maybe worth noting, according to top investigative journalist man Jamil Chade on Twitter, last year FIFA spent 4.5 million on the best ceremony, whereas according to him they spent 5.1 million on women's football in general. So maybe FIFA's priorities here could be better.
Yes, I think you're probably right, aren't you? Right, that'll do for part two. In part three we'll look ahead to the Premier League, which is back this weekend. Welcome back to part three of Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Before we get to the Premier League, just mention this. Jackie Oatley tweeted it yesterday. A lot of money required to enable GB deaf football team captain Claire Stancliffe to fund her knee operation. She was injured while playing for Great Britain. She's been involved in the deaf women's football team for 10 years, is a self-funded athlete, suffered a very serious knee injury in the bronze medal match at the Deaf Olympics. She's been told the injury is so severe she might not be able to play football again without private treatment. She started a Just Giving page. I retweeted it yesterday. So if you have a look at that, the Jackie Oatley tweet that I retweeted yesterday, we'll put a link below so you can find it there and help out if you can. Right, Premier League preview. Manchester United Spurs is the game of the weekend. The big question, what will Jose do?
Well, they're at home. So Mourinho away at any decent club will obviously murder the game and torture everyone who might be watching. At home, I mean, there's a chance they might have a go at perhaps trying to win. Spurs are fallible, as we saw, I mean, with a changed team this week. Well, actually, United have their 100% home record. Spurs won their last six away games. I mean, it is a genuinely exciting game, I think. And it's just as well, because the rest of the weekend doesn't really have any... it doesn't really have a rival.
That's true. I mean, we did say ahead of the Liverpool game, hey, Manchester United are a bit different this season. So it could be different.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't different. I take your point, it was a...
That's taught us a lesson. You know, Manchester United and Liverpool have a history of producing matches, but Mourinho doesn't... Mourinho has his own history, and it's his identity that his team carries rather than their
clubs. But and if you're Josie as well, if you look at how Spurs countered Liverpool, then you've got to think... we don't really want to have the ball a lot.
But I just think, I get that on the bigger, like we've said before, like if you smash all the smaller clubs and you sort of don't drop too many points against the top teams, you've got a good chance of winning the title. So fair enough, you go away to Anfield and you sort of cower in your own half, whatever. But if you're going to do that at home as well, that's 10 games of your season, like against the other top six teams in which you're not going out to play. That's a lot of football where you just sort of do the turtle formation as the old Romans would. And you can't do that. Surely at one point that gets a bit embarrassing.
At Old Trafford, yeah.
And they won, didn't they?
They won 1-0. Spurs played badly, gave away a daft goal. Harry Kane was at fault, if I remember correctly, actually. And, Manchester United just defended the lead. And I fully would expect them to try and do the same thing again.
Palace-West Ham is an interesting game. Yeah, it doesn't sort of jump out of you as fascinating. But, it's very important for both those guys. And what Bilic did yesterday, fine, but...
Yeah.
With this whole two games to save his job, or do you think, I mean, I know you don't like talking about it, but you think he saved it yesterday, so now he can go and enjoy this?
Well, perhaps the rope has lengthened a bit. You know, he's got a bit more slack there. Crystal Palace, I mean, it's genuinely interesting. They had a fantastic result against Chelsea, who have been wobbling a bit recently. And then they were embarrassed, really, by Bristol City midweek. Again, there were changes, but their defending was terrible and their goalkeeper let in. I mean, the last two goals were both long range. One went into the corner, one didn't go anywhere near. I thought the third he could have stopped. Anyway, beating Chelsea is an exciting result that hints at some kind of glorious rebirth. But they need to follow that up and they need to do so soon. It is a really intriguing match.
Arsenal play Swansea, Liverpool, Huddersfield. Presumably we all saw this lovely story of this 9-year-old Huddersfield fan who found a £5 note and then sent it to Huddersfield Town saying, please give this to Aaron Moy because he played so well against Manchester United. Moy can keep the money because he played very well and scored. Does that make you feel warm inside, Barry?
I hope Aaron Moy didn't keep the money.
Okay, but the story's nice.
Is it?
So, the story is half nice.
Okay.
It's half nice.
Right.
So it starts with a child picking up a £5 note that isn't theirs on their way out of a football stadium, and their father saying, you can't keep that money, it's not yours. And, I mean, that is a good lesson. Well done. From there, you choose your best charity, your favourite charity, and you send it off to the charity. You don't pick your favourite millionaire Premier League footballer and give it to them. It's a question.
He's nine.
His dad taught him half a fantastic lesson there.
Okay.
Presumably, like Aaron Moy should now send him a signed shirt, or maybe like invite him to the training ground for a day or something.
He has already said he wants to meet him.
Ah, oh, brilliant!
So give him a week's wages.
I think what happened is he found the fiver, and his dad said you can't keep that. But what you can do is write this really silly letter, send it to Huddersfield, and I bet you'll get a meeting with Aaron Moy and a signed shirt and a free match ticket. And probably boots, and you'll get to be a mascot, which is worth way more than the fiver. So, like, technically, you're not keeping the fiver, you're investing it, and you're getting way more. So it's basic greed. That 9-year-old kid is greedy.
As we said last week, well done to whoever changed Barry's Wikipedia page to say contracted misery at a young age. Say again.
So cynical, Barry. No good.
Watford, Stoke, you're going to that, Simon.
Yes.
Excited. Watford doing well, aren't they?
Watford doing pretty well. Stoke, obviously, not so much. I'm scarred a bit by last year's Watford-Stoke match, which was, I think, probably the most boring hour and a half that I've ever experienced in my entire life, and I have been bored in
That's not just football, just the most boring hour
have
and a
you
half.
Have seen the English Patient?
I haven't seen the English Patient.
Ah, there you go. If you want to cleanse
okay,
last year's Watford-Stoke of your mind.
I was really scarred by it. And, you know, I had my son with me and he, you know, he loves football. He's always excited by matches and always grills me during them about, you know, how what's happening and you know, what's going to happen from now. And, you know, at halftime I said, nothing has happened and nothing's going to happen. And we're going to sit here for another miserable hour and then we're going to go home miserable. And so it proved.
If your son found a fiver on the way out, what would you tell him to do?
I would say, you can't keep that. It's not yours. Give it to me.
Give it to me or Etienne Capoue. Bournemouth played Chelsea. West Brom, Manchester City. The not-so-super Sunday is Brighton, Southampton, Leicester, Everton.
West Brom, Man City is fun, though, because that's like Pulis versus Pep. And it's if you look at the numbers, it's really good because I kind of admire how thoroughly Pulis West Brom are. Because if you look at the numbers, they have played the most inaccurate long balls in the league, the fewest accurate short balls. They've also played the fewest inaccurate short balls, so they're just the fewest short balls in general. They have the least possession and the lowest pass completion ratio. So they're full Pulis.
Yeah, see, below the line, Jamie, because Barry asked the point of West Brom, and Jamie says, as a West Brom fan, I have to confirm Barry's assertion that it is no fun supporting the Baggies. Do we really have to suck the very marrow out of football itself? He says, what's the point of being surviving minnows if no one, even your own fans, wants to watch you play?
They're just unapologetically anti-football in a way that kind of fascinates me a bit. And as you would imagine, Man City are in the other end of the table and all of those statistics I mentioned pretty much. So that should be... Could that be like the first Premier League game where a team has no possession? Or like 2%. They only take kickoffs and they never have the ball apart from that.
Wolves are just showing that a 5-5-0 formation works quite well at blunting Manchester City. I'm sure that'll be grist to the Pulis mill. What might happen when they...
How many centre-halves can you get into one formation? Yeah. It's Tony Pulis story.
If you were Tony Pulis, would you take a little bit of air out of all the footballs? That's what I'd be tempted to do. So Brighton, Southampton, Leicester, Everton...
all the air in the footballs with helium.
but crucially... I'm not saying that Man City will necessarily win 10-0 because I think, you know, that there can be merit to playing in this sort of ultra destructive way against a team like that. So I'm genuinely looking forward to trying to. It's one of the matches we can see, isn't it? But trying to catch the highlights anyway.
Monday, Burnley, Newcastle, and the Championship 4-3-3rd when Leeds take on Sheffield United. That's on Friday night. Lots of people saying, why isn't Chris Wilder actually being suggested for all these top jobs, doing just such a very good job. Wolves go to QPR. Wolves top, obviously. Cardiff are second. They play Millwall. And Norwich are sixth, home to Derby. Birmingham Villa's on Sunday. Villa doing pretty well at the moment.
I mean, Mike's British coaching is dead. So, R.I.P. You know, it's been put down this week. It's gone. So
it's a very good point.
You know the answer.
Lars, Liverpool, Huddersfield, before we move on from the Premier League fixtures.
I mean, it's intriguing because it's... David Wagner of Huddersfield versus Jurgen Klopp, who was the best man at his wedding. And as I understand it, Klopp was instrumental in convincing Wagner to go into coaching in the first place. Wagner had finished his footballing career and he was going into teaching. And Jurgen Klopp, according to Wagner, Jurgen Klopp suggested on a phone call to his old friend that maybe you should go into coaching, and it's part of what drove Wagner in that direction. So I guess with Jurgen Klopp having a bit of a bad time of it at Liverpool, there would be some sort of cosmic something if Wagner creates more trouble from there.
Do you think they'll stand next to each other having those nice chats that managers sometimes have during games?
You'd imagine they're very jovial people, both of them, aren't they? You'd imagine they'd have a big hug, and you know. But it's also one of those, since their style is quite similar, you, how much gegenpressing can one game take? You know, it'll be another fun one to watch.
Fitbar Corner, Barry.
Well, there was midweek Scottish Premiership fixtures. Celtic won the league by beating Aberdeen 3-0 at Pittodrie. They're now 3 points clear of Aberdeen, hammered them, and the Aberdeen manager basically just conceded they're far too good for anyone in this league, and so that's it. The season is over in Scotland. Interesting, if Celtic avoid defeat at home to Kilmarnock at the weekend, they will match their own 100-year-old UK record for longest unbeaten domestic streak. It's currently at 61 games. 62 is the record, so... That's something sort of to keep interest alive in Scotland. Rangers, the gift that keeps on giving.
This is amazing. Amazing last 5 minutes.
They were playing against Kilmarnock. They were goal up in added time. About to take a penalty when Ryan Jack received a red card, his third of the season, although I should add the caveat, one of them was rescinded. Following a set two with Kirk Broadfoot, famously featured on this podcast a long time ago, when suffering a serious injury while poaching an egg. So anyway, they had a schmozzle, and while all this was Ryan Jack got sent off. While all this was going on, Daniel Candelas was left waiting to take his penalty, and he had time to think about it, never a good thing, and it was eventually saved by Jamie MacDonald. And Killy promptly went up the other end of the pitch and scored an equaliser. Deep, deep into added time through Chris Burke, who's another Rangers old boy like Kirk Broadfoot. And that was Steve Clark's first match in charge of Kilmarnock after, I think he was caretaker manager of Villa last season for a while, and this is his third crack at managing himself. You know, he's more renowned as an assistant manager. So.
All right. Thank you for Fitbar. Simon, what did you draw while Barry was doing Fitbar Corner?
I drew the conclusion that Scottish football is extremely exciting and constantly relevant.
But what did you actually draw?
Oh, right, just drawing some... I'm drawing a house.
Oh, yeah. Good. I like... Is it a classic house? You know, two windows, a door, little chimney, smiling sun?
So it started with just a little square, and then I split that square into little subsections.
Yeah.
And at that point, I wasn't planning a house, but it started to look a little windowish to me. And so it's gone on from there, and I've added a front door.
Oh,
I'm onto a second window now.
Okay. Well, I'll add it. I'll take a photo and put it out there on the Twitter. Yes, Lars?
Not really related to Scottish football, but maybe a little bit. Ronnie Dyla, who we spoke about earlier as having turned up for the players' meeting naked. Since then, his team has won 4 out of 5, and they've scored 12 goals in their last two games. So, you know, if you're listening, Roy Hodgson, this might be something for the weekend.
Please, Lars.
It could work. It diffuses the tension.
Is he still naked, Ronnie?
No, well, that would be extraordinary. No, he's not.
Okay.
In that last game, okay, so Viking captain Andre Danielsen celebrated his 500th game for the club, during which he was sent off in the last 7-1, which is pretty impressive.
100% Ola says, Lars has to mention Nicholas Bentner's second goal against Brann on Sunday.
Okay. Well, Nicholas Bentner has gotten his groove on and scored two good goals against Brann. The second one notable because it was, and this is a conservative estimate, I'd say 500 yards offside, at least. And it was one of those when he picked up the through ball, he actually kind of stopped and looked at the ref like, seriously, are you going to let me, you know, get away with that? But the ref did let him get away with it, and he duly dispatched the goal, much to the fury of the home fans, who were pretty unimpressed.
Exciting Blackpool news. Tangerine Knights tweets, yet another embarrassing mistake from the people who, in inverted commas, run our once proud club. The clock is ticking, Oyston out. They've given Kyle Vassell the Player of the Month award. If you look very closely, they haven't finished writing Blackpool, and it just says Blackpool FC on the actual award that they handed out, which is tremendous, isn't it? There you are, Simon.
Yeah, that is fabulous. I mean, you would treasure that so much more,
wouldn't you? Just
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Right, on to questions and feedback corner. Scott says, what did Ryan Babbel do this week? He's serving a suspension, Scott, after being sent off when he accidentally swung around and kicked someone in the chest. Toby says, does Wayne Rooney look like the type to keep his ketchup in the fridge or the cupboard? Barry?
I would say the fridge. Mm. I only recently discovered keeping ketchup in the fridge was a thing. And was absolutely appalled by it.
Okay,
I think he probably leaves it out, and that Colleen or whoever else around puts it in the fridge after him.
Do you reckon he doesn't clear up after himself?
I reckon he's probably a little lax of that. I mean, maybe he does. Maybe he puts his dishes in the dishwasher. Maybe he'll stick his plate in the dishwasher. But I reckon he always leaves the ketchup out.
Okay. He doesn't rinse, though, does he? He doesn't rinse that bit of ketchup off the plate as he should do. David asks, this is for Lars and Simon. Would you prefer to be A, as grumpy as people think Barry is, or B, as annoying as Twitter thinks Max is?
I think I'm both, depending on the mood.
I guess I'd go with grumpiness.
Okay. The abuse factor went up hugely after I announced I didn't like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Dan said, I never understand the abuse you got until I just heard your comments on Lord of the Rings. You deserve everything you get. Gibbsy, Tolkien boring, that's the final straw.
I'd be with you on the books, but I quite enjoy the movies, even though the last one was way too long.
Really? Because I'd be with him on the movies, but less so on the books.
Ali Mora says,
books, you know, it's like Hobbit taking a crap, and it takes 48 pages to describe it.
But this is my, but I agree with Ali Mora, who says, look, the boredom is compounded by Gandalf's arrival at the end, rendering the entire journey pointless because they could have just flown in the first place. Seriously, I was watching one of those films and an eagle pops up. They could have just gotten the bloody eagle at the start. Anyway, Baz, you and I got some praise on the Wittertainment message board. Yeah, we don't get it on ours, but we got something on others. But someone said, on Monday we discovered Baz has never invited me around to his house. And Manic Mailman says, I reckon the reason Barry hasn't had Max round or invited him is because I imagine his place to be like McNulty's apartment in The Wire, with an unmade mattress on the floor, a blanket hanging over the window for a curtain, and clothes strewn all over the place. There's also a cathode ray TV in the corner with football on it at all times.
No, I'm very tidy, actually.
Okay. On whether Brighton's Gaten Bong could marry Chandler Bing's sister to become the Bing Bongs, Louis said Chandler Bing is an only child. So that is an impossibility, sadly.
But in one episode of Friends, where they're having the quiz, I think it's to see who knows each other best, it turns out that his TV guide arrives with the wrong name on it each week, and it's Chandler Bong.
So the issue isn't that Chandler Bing is fictional.
That's not a problem.
It's that the fictional Chandler Bing has no sister.
Yeah, absolutely.
For anyone to marry.
Yeah. Have you finished drawing your house yet, Simon? A couple more to go. Mr. Peanut Butter says, Max Rushton's future wife is the best thing to have happened to the football podcast world. Andrew Dean says, no one cares about your other half on the phone. Andrew Dean also finishes today's pod.
I love when people come in the comments and speak for everyone. You know, my view is so important that this is what everyone thinks. I've canvassed all your listeners.
Well, Andrew, not a fan. Is this still called Football Weekly? Surely it's going to be renamed Max Rushton Weekly with Friends. I don't usually criticise online, but his self-obsessed nonsense is starting to make this unlistenable. On Monday, I'll be joined by my dad, Auntie Gay, and my friend Gabby, who works for House and Garden magazine. Until then, Barry, thanks for your time.
Cheers.
Cheers, Lars. Thank you, son.
Yeah.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.